Hello, friends. Welcome to the Logistics of Logistics podcast. My name is Joe Lynch. Thank you so much for joining us today. On the Logistics of Logistics, I talk to experts in logistics and transportation, warehousing, fulfillment, supply chain, and of course, technology. And during these interviews, I'm always the one asking the dumb questions. I ask the dumb questions so you don't have to.
Today's topic is the $440 billion logistics problem with my friend Ilya Preston. Ilya is the co-founder and CEO of PackSafe, a logistics technology company that provides autonomous AI decision support logistics companies, transportation companies, and supply chain companies. The logistics industry has a $440 billion problem. No exaggeration. Ilya and his team at PackSafe are part of the solution. If you want to learn more, please take a listen. How's it going, Ilya?
Doing well. Thanks for having me, Joe. Good to be back.
Yeah. I interviewed you years ago, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But please introduce yourself and your company and where you're calling from today.
Yeah, so Ilya Preston, I'm one of the co-founders and CEO at PackSafe, calling from the Midwest, Indianapolis, Indiana. We've gone through about 8 seasons of weather here over the last 4 weeks, so trying to keep warm.
Isn't that the truth? Yeah.
PackSafe is, we consider ourselves to be autonomous decision support for temperature-controlled logistics. So we are a device-agnostic, AI-enabled risk management platform that helps shippers and service providers that are transporting perishable goods, namely life science products, food and beverage products, reduce their overall product loss, improve their operational efficiencies, and just make smarter network decisions.
Very nice. Very nice. You said something in there, which was device agnostic, meaning you don't care what device. Now, when I talked to you last time, you guys had a device, a sensor that you would put in on a pallet or in a truckload, and it would give me the information on not only the GPS, but how cold it was, the humidity, all that kind of stuff. And now you say you're device agnostic. Please explain.
Yeah. So I think first and foremost, the device component of live streaming that product location and condition data is absolutely critical to unlock anything downstream in terms of intelligence, in terms of workflow automation. So it's a very necessary layer. At the same time, when we first offered our device, we had a white labeled, I actually have it somewhere around here, but we had a white labeled product that we took off the shelf and offered to our customer base and then tried to essentially upsell them on the intelligence. So our hypothesis was, hey, if we want to come in and offer risk as a product, predictive capabilities, prescriptive capabilities, customers were probably going to be a little bit down the maturity cycle to fully understand what that means. We viewed the device as essentially a customer acquisition tool where we could come in with a device. Everybody knew what a dot on the map meant. Everybody knew why it was important. We can sell them on the device. We could acquire that customer and slowly introduce them to some of the more advanced capabilities of our platform. Now, what we didn't realize by 2020, 2021 was that customers had already been asking for these capabilities for some time. And they'd been asking their service providers to provide these capabilities. So once we unveiled some of the more advanced capabilities of our platform to various IoT providers, to logistics service providers, 3PLs, et cetera, they very quickly understood the value. And so we found it more effective for us, more optimal to partner with service providers. And in some cases, we work directly with the manufacturers who already have devices in place, who already have IoT devices that they've gone through RFP processes on, made sourcing selections on, and they can share that data with us directly from their control tower. So there's really no need for us to have the devices. I think being a device provider is incredibly complex, and there are companies that are doing an excellent job of that.
You got to pick a lane. The device all by itself is a full-time gig, obviously. And so I've interviewed Tive in the past. I'm assuming those are one of the devices you guys would take data from and be a partner with. But tell me, what are some of the other devices that are out there that you guys connect to? Just give me a sense for it, because I'm sure I'm probably like a lot of people going, device, what do you mean? What device? Doing what?
Yeah, there's a lot of device providers out in the market. In some cases, like I said, we have direct integrations with device providers. In other cases, we don't require that direct integration with the device provider. Our customers that are bringing in that device data into their control tower, they're able to share through an API essentially the device data with us. We can run it through our algorithms and send back the outputs back into their control tower through API. There's a lot of great device companies out there in the market. We play more significantly in cold chain than anywhere else. Household names within cold chain IoT are Sensitech, Elpro, Controlant, Roambee. Tive has been making a nice entry into that space, as you said. So there's a lot of IoT device companies. They're all, I would say, pushing the bounds on what's possible when it comes to IoT form factor, IoT size, even cost, right? We're probably just a few short years away from operationalizing a sticker or a label.
Seen that.
Stick onto a package, and form factor is not an issue. Weight's not an issue. At that point, the cost is very cheap compared to what IoT cost is today.
Yeah. So just for anyone who's getting lost, I mean, there's a lot of technology involved in this, but what we're talking about is mostly cold chain, and that cold chain would be food or pharma. That's most of your customers. And we've always had the GPS information, which from our truck, from our ELD, from Four Kites, from P44 and others, Descartes, that was good for GPS, but it wasn't good for the temperature necessarily. So we had other devices like Tive and some of the others that you just mentioned. And I'm thinking about Tive again, because I've known those guys. They would put a sensor that's the size of a deck of cards and getting smaller every darn day and less expensive, I think, every darn day. And that will tell me, if I put that little deck of cards sensor onto my pallet of pharma stuff or food, it will tell me not only where it's at, which is important, but also what is the temperature of that product. And it'll tell me if it was the humidity levels. What else can it tell me?
Yeah, so at a product or a pallet level, it can tell you things like how the product was handled, if it was dropped, if it was tilted a certain way, if humidity became an issue, if that's important to that kind of product. It can tell you when it's getting delayed, right, because of that GPS data. So it can tell you there's, I think, a pretty broad spectrum of sensors, and some of them focus more so purely on location and temperature. Others include the full gambit and have accelerometers and various other light sensor if a package was open, for example. But I think the key thing that we found as we've been building this is that's one side of the puzzle. And we basically identified three kind of data source buckets that are absolutely critical to do what we do in automating workflows and enabling enhanced intelligence. I think the second bucket is a lot of the third-party data. So this is like traffic, weather, fleet, flight, marine data. But the third bucket is really what's most important. And that's the data that's coming from the enterprise, the shipper themselves. That can be things like shipping SOPs, right? So standard operating procedures around, hey, this product on this particular lane has to be shipped out before 6 p.m. And it has to be shipped out on Monday through Wednesday. It cannot be shipped out on Thursdays and Fridays. Or even packaging SOPs, right? This product on this lane, we're using an active refrigeration system versus a passive shipping system. Or the carrier selection mix. Or the IoT device selection mix. And when you start adding in all of these things combined with the product specification data, you have unlimited numbers of variables. Any one of them can start impacting performance at a product level. And there's not really an effective and scalable way to be able to understand all of these correlations by, if you're a data analyst, if you're a data scientist, I suppose with an army of data scientists, you could probably do it, but that's not very cost effective, right? When you have thousands of
those data sources are going to be something we need to talk a little more in depth. We'll come back to that. But first, tell us a little bit about you. Where'd you grow up? Where'd you go to school? Give us some career highlights before you started PackSafe.
Yeah, sure. Immigrated to the U.S. when I was 5. Came from St. Petersburg, Russia.
Sounds like a good time to leave.
Yeah, you don't say. Grew up in Columbus, Indiana. I grew up in Columbus, went to school in Bloomington at IU for the first 2.5 years, and then finished up in Indianapolis at the University of Indianapolis. I spent the first 5 years of my career working at Cummins, a large Fortune 200 industrial manufacturer. I was a part of the supply chain strategy team, building out global strategies for raw commodities. And then I ventured into consulting and spent almost 4 years there between PwC and KPMG. For about a year and a half, I was working on the financial due diligence side. And then I spent just over 2 years on the supply chain optimization side and strategic sourcing side. And it was there where I was specifically working within life sciences. So I worked with companies like Baxter and Novartis and Express Scripts, and really got to see the digital transformation investments that they were making at that time. So investments around ERP systems, enterprise resource planning systems, transportation management systems, even visibility platforms. And this was in the mid-2010s. So visibility platforms that they were investing in. And our teams on the consulting side were oftentimes asked to come in and help these companies make sense of all this data. Hey, I got a ton of data here on the supply chain side from my ERP system, from the TMS system, from visibility platforms, from risk platforms, and nothing is tying it together. Nothing is tying it to the product, to the shipment number, right? To the lot number. None of this is connected. Help me connect this and make sense of all this data so that I can operationalize it. I can put standard operating procedures around it, put workflows around it, and actually use it to drive changes within my network for the better. I think one of the most important things to recognize, Joe, is you think about, you brought this title in, $440 billion problem. How long have we been using visibility platforms, IoT devices in our industry, right? Is it at least 10 years, more, probably since 2008, 2009, 2010, but it's really picked up over the last 10 years and especially in the last 5 years with COVID. But yet every year, nothing happens to that number. It doesn't go down.
And by the way, since you hinted at it, what is the $440 billion problem?
I spoiled it. Yeah, sorry. So, spoiler alert. So that's the amount of product that's lost in the cold chain between pharma, life sciences, and food and beverage. So about $40 billion worth of product loss every year within the pharmaceutical supply chain, specifically due to temperature excursions, and about 10x that on the food and bev side.
Yeah. And by the way, I Googled it just before we came on here, and it actually said even higher. So we picked 440 billion, but that could be a rounding error, right? We could be at $500 billion. And to give a sense for the magnitude, it's like 30-40% of the food. And that's shocking because this is the whole industry is concerned with sustainability. When you talk about sustainability, let's talk about food for a second. I'll use chicken. We raise that chicken from a chick. We feed it. It lives whatever short life it has. It's killed. It's transported. It's frozen, whatever. And then it comes to market. And then just before we buy it, somebody says, this is no good. Throw it out. It's the ultimate waste. And that, if we're going to talk about sustainability, it's not just in food, it's in a lot of business. We have to make better decisions. And I know one of the things you buzzword for your company is autonomous decision support. All that data that you talked about earlier and all the data sources we got, as you mentioned, IoT data, third-party data like weather and geopolitical, and then we got enterprise data. All that data, I could hand it to you in a spreadsheet, in 25 spreadsheets, and say, here you go, Ilya, take care of this. And in your little human brain, you go, geez, I'm a smart guy, Joe, but I can't figure this out, not on a timely basis.
That's absolutely right. And that's what I saw on the consulting side, right? Like, we were brought in droves to help connect all this data up, tie it together, and then help make sense of it. That is not scalable. If you're a pharmaceutical company and you have 3,000 or 4,000 shipping lanes, and today most of the companies maybe have 10 to 20% of their lanes rolled out with real-time IoT, but they're working towards 80%, 80 to 100%, depending on the company. So before long, they're going to have thousands of lanes rolled out across IoT, tens of thousands of shipments, hundreds of thousands in some cases on each lane. So how do you power through that? It's impossible to continuously monitor when, you know, even things like internal standard operating procedures are changed. And then you might change it this March. And then 6 months from now, you're going to start to see impacts on your actual supply chain. To be able to go back cross-functionally, internally, and tie that as a cause and effect item is not something that's being done today manually. And to your point, you mentioned the food example. Hey, this chicken's going bad before you buy it. What's even worse, and this I get so frustrated when this happens. I don't know how many times I buy fruits, vegetables, especially meat, and within 2 days, 3 days, it changes color, it goes bad. On the food side, with pharma, at least you typically know. You have much tighter control and you typically know if a product's no good. With food, if something like lettuce goes out of temperature spec for a couple hours or a couple days, and then it freezes and then it goes back to normal, you're not going to know until after you buy it, but it's not going to have the shelf life that it's intended to.
Yeah, I like to buy spinach. I like spinach salads. And then I like to throw the spinach out right when I get home, just so I don't have to wait a week. I like to say, okay, rather than put it in my refrigerator and pretend I'm going to throw it out right now. So when and why did you start Paxiv? I know we've talked around this problem a lot, but when and why did you start Paxiv? What hole did you see in the market?
Yeah, so it was the idea for Paxiv was really generated during my years in consulting, where I saw how much companies were spending, not just on our teams, on the consulting teams, but on their own internal data analyst, data science teams to work through all these issues. When I saw how much they were spending with their service providers on things like custom reporting, being able to pull various custom reports and how much they were actually paying for that, for things like lane mapping, right? Temperature lane mapping or performance lane mapping exercises. These are essentially manual exercises that pharmaceutical companies go through to understand how various lanes are performing, either over a longer period of time, so call it like every 3 or 4 years, or when they roll out a new product. So when they're ready to introduce a new product, they'll do a lane performance exercise. Each of these lane performance exercises cost a couple hundred grand to do. They take a few months to do, and they leave that company with a static data set, right? Over that 3 month period, what are the universe of routes that a particular carrier took? What routes should be approved as a part of the standard operating procedure or not approved, right? But it's static in the sense that you're using that constant mix of that particular packaging type, that particular packaging brand with this IoT device, with this carrier. Once you start changing variables, once you start incorporating seasonality, various different routes, different temperature, external temperature, different traffic conditions, anything within those static data studies can change. And so nothing is capturing all that information dynamically. I think the realization of just how much static data and how much labor and money was going towards trying to make this as dynamic, as real time, as intelligent as possible was what planted the seed of, hey, how much of this can we automate? And how can we empower the shippers, the owners of the goods, the pharmaceutical companies, the food and beverage manufacturers to really understand where the risk is within their network and to automate their workflows so that they can spend time doing what they do best, which is making life-saving medicines and drugs and creating the foods that we love to eat.
All right, I love it. So getting back to it, what year did you start?
We started at the end of 2018. As you noted previously, we started as more of a device company. That was the public facing. We were always building the intelligence component, but that was not so much public facing at the time. We decided to go device agnostic in 2021 and then relaunched this whole intelligence platform in 2021 and 2022 and have continued to build onto that.
You've pointed out that there's just an enormous amount of data that is out there. And all we're trying to do as shippers is I want to be on time and in full. And so it sounds real simple. I want that truck to get here and I want it to be full and I don't want it to be past the expiration date or even close to the expiration date. And we are so far from that. When you say that 30 to 40% of the food that we, and by the way, Google it if you don't believe me, I was shocked by that. Did say 30 or 40% of the food and then a pretty good chunk, 10, I don't know what the percentage is for pharma, but billions and billions of dollars going to waste. And we just got past COVID. We haven't talked about that, but these are life-saving drugs in many cases. And they obviously can't go bad, but we spend so much darn money on healthcare and then to say, oh yeah, and throw in a whole bunch of waste. And I think the challenge is we know that's the problem and we know data is the answer, but the data is, there's so much data. There's such a volume of data. I could give it to a smart person like you, Ilya, and say, hey, I just emailed you those spreadsheets, make a decision. Again, I sent you something that's probably in the past. It's static. It's not real time. And you're looking through it, even if you figured out what to look at. It's not easy. I think we could go get very basic and say, just make sure the temperature of the truck or the temperature of the warehouse is never bad, but it's well beyond that.
Yeah. And it's funny. I think you mentioned that's a conservative estimate. So I think, yeah, you're right. On the food and bev side, it's always a little bit easier to know when products either have their shelf life drastically reduced or impacted or just go bad altogether and have to be scrapped and wasted. On the pharmaceutical side, I am fairly certain that $40 billion number is drastically underreported. I think one of the things that we found is that pharmaceutical companies really do not like to share their excursion data. Anytime that there's a temperature excursion, it's a huge deal. And typically, a large pharmaceutical company will have thousands of temperature events each and every year. A lot of those end up going through a disposition process or essentially a process where a quality manager has to manually go put together a corrective actions report, a root cause analysis report, and it has to go through further review, which again, eats a lot of time, a lot of effort, a lot of energy, trying to understand and diagnose what caused this particular temperature excursion to happen. Was it a packaging failure? Did the reefer overcool? Is it sitting on the tarmac for 4 hours when in the shipping standard operating procedure, it clearly states you cannot exceed 1 hour on the tarmac? Pulling all that information together, very manual process. And pharma executives don't often, I think, know at the ground level what's actually happening. We've seen many cases where those numbers are underreported to us, and then we start working together and there's a big surprise as to, hey, why do I have a 10% excursion rate on various lanes? That's way higher than I thought it was.
Yep. And we live in a society that has trust in its institutions, trust in its business. But when COVID hit, we had a lot of people say, I'm not so sure about this vaccine. It's a new technology. It seemed like they rushed it, whatever the concern was. I don't think it's been too bad that people took the shot and we don't have mass death. So if you at any point undermine the institutions, and I would say the drug companies are institutions, the food companies are institutions. If you get to a point where you say, I don't eat produce from that grocery store, or I'd never buy that product because it went bad last year. These are billions and billions of dollars. And by the way, we're dealing with the freight fraud in the trucking business. As soon as shippers no longer trust the people they're talking to on the phone, on work, sending emails to, that there's a book and it was called The Speed of Trust. And once you trust people, things move quickly. When you don't trust people, they slow way, way down. If I can't trust my logistics partners, by the way, I think that we're getting better every day, but I don't think we've known the full magnitude of it until we started with all this IoT and that's Internet of Things, or as I like to say, Internet of Trucking. we didn't know how bad the problem it is. But now what we're looking for, Ilya, and this is where you come in, I need to make better decisions. And I can't make those decisions after the game ended. I have to make these decisions in real time.
Yeah. And if you're the logistics provider, it doesn't look very good if your customer, if your shippers know that there's a problem before you do. What we're finding is logistics service providers are actually one of the buckets of customers that are lining up to adopt our solution and offer it in various ways to their customer base. In some cases, they're using our platform to just get smarter internally. Hey, I want to understand what our customer's risk is, and I want to do something about it internally and change the way that we operationalize the data. In other cases, I want to use your platform to help us either improve or augment various services that we already offer to our customer base. Service providers use us in various ways, but at the end of the day, they have to know that the problem exists, ideally before the customer, so that they can be proactive, to your point, get out ahead of it and make the necessary adjustments and changes the customer does.
So are your customers mainly the shippers, or are they mainly the 3PLs and brokers and carriers?
It's a mix of both. So when we talk about, there's two customer archetypes. On the shipper side, we've got the manufacturers, the product owners of pharmaceutical goods and food and beverage goods. On the service provider side, it's essentially a bucket that incorporates 3PLs, IoT device companies, as well as cold chain packaging companies.
Yep. And by the way, it reminds me, years ago, I was advising a very large shipper on managing their third-party logistics companies. And before we were going into a meeting, the vice president of this large shipping company said, what is one thing that I should get assurances on today? Because we were talking, I said, you're finding out the problems before they are, and you're reporting the problems. You should say to them today, I should never be the first one. My team should never be alerted to a problem that you didn't alert us to. If our customer calls and says, hey, by the way, that went bad, then you're calling your logistics providers or your technology providers. That is a broken relationship.
That is. And I think historically, the service providers were much more guarded about how much they share, when they share it with their customer base. Now that they understand that customers have access to this information themselves, whether they're adopting because they truly want to improve their service or because they want to maintain that strong relationship with the customer, either way, they understand they need this capability to be able to offer their customers the least amount of disruption and the most amount of value.
I know sometimes we use the term visibility and visibility tools, and that, I think of that as one thing. There's another thing, another word that I use, transparency, meaning if we're working together, you're my customer, the shipper, and I'm your service provider, I want you to have full transparency into everything we're doing. I think that's the only way it can work, because these are problems that are not minor. I as a logistics provider can't solve it without you. You as the shipper, as the manufacturer, you can't solve it without me. That's where we need transparency. That data has to, and also we need actionable data. This is the challenge. IoT now has probably the ability to just bury us in information. What I need is actionable information.
And I believe it also has to be agnostic to IoT device. It has to be agnostic to the carrier, the 3PL. One of the things I learned early on in my career, when I was at Cummins, right, on the supply chain side, we would track on time in full data for our suppliers, right? So how many times were they late? How many times did products not come in full or came in damaged? And our data did not always match, actually almost never matched the data that was coming through from said supplier, from said 3PL or logistics company. And there was always a disconnect between the three parties, between the service provider, between the supplier, between us. So our data always had lower percentages, and the other groups always had higher percentages. So where is that disconnect? And I remember how much time it took to reconcile those types of things. So I believe that if you want true transparency, you have to be leveraging capabilities that are agnostic of any one provider.
Yeah. I think you also have to have the technology is one thing. The next thing you need to have, probably the foundational, is the right attitude, which is if I'm serving you and you're the shipper, I have to be able to trust that I can speak to Ilya without him threatening to fire me or threatening to get a new supplier. You have to be open and honest that these are our problems, not just my problem, unless it is truly just my problem. This is important stuff. So I want to go through a case study. You don't have to mention a company, but I want to try and understand why companies come to you. So describe a customer, don't mention the names, what they do and why they came to you and what problem they were having and how you solved it.
Yeah, sure. So I can tell you one of our earlier customers, a pharmaceutical company, came to us after trying a number of predicted time of arrival capabilities in the market. So they had tried a few. They had, I think, adopted one or two for a brief period of time and found that the balance between accuracy and cost was terrible. So anything that was remotely accurate didn't scale across hundreds or thousands of lanes. Anything that was affordable was hugely inaccurate. So I think this particular company then tried to build something themselves and were unable to get them.
Are these the sensors, the IoT side that they're talking about?
They were leveraging providers that were offering a predicted time of arrival capability. Right. Some sensors offer that themselves. Others, there are platforms, aggregation platforms in the market that offer that as well. In this particular case, they tried our predicted time of arrival model, and it completely changed the way that they were able to do business on their outbound shipping side. So number one, the number of calls, the call volumes to the call centers was drastically reduced because the accuracy was very high in our model.
So this is them shipping to their customers.
Correct. Both internal and external customers. And number two, that customer satisfaction and customer engagement with their own portal where they were showing this time of arrival and how accurate it actually was. The customers were able to improve their receiving operations and sync labor with product actually coming in. And they were very surprised at the level of accuracy that our models were able to produce. And after that, they asked, what else you got? So we slowly introduced them to our temperature prediction capability, which predicts temperature excursions before they occur. We introduced them to our risk capabilities, where we're able to quantify risk on both a lane and a shipment basis at scale. And this particular partner has since expanded across all of those capabilities, and they leverage our platform today to help them understand where is the risk in my network. It helps them on the operational side predict when adverse events are going to happen and be able to reduce their monitoring and intervention costs with their service providers. And most importantly, it helps them automate a lot of really manual processes that exist today. So things like the route verification that I told you about, those route verification studies. Today they're expensive to conduct. They're all done manually. We can help automate that right off the bat, help automate things like root cause analysis and corrective actions. So there's a broad spread and help optimize decision-making and network decisions around packaging efficacy. Hey, I have hundreds or thousands of lanes today with a lot of products being shipped all over the world. How do I know? Packaging is such a large spend item on the balance sheet. So I'm investing a ton into packaging spend. How do I know that I'm not over-packaging or under-packaging on my lanes amongst all of these shifting variables, right? Everything is dynamic. All of my changes to standard operating procedures, to shipping schedules, to other network changes, things are going to change. And in some cases where packaging was adequate originally, it may become inadequate moving forward. And vice versa. In some cases where I had planned to have a ton of cooling gels and maybe dry ice In this case, maybe it's not needed. And so maybe I'm overspending on packaging on these 20 lanes, right? And that's a lot of money when you're talking about the thousands of shipments that's being spread across. So things like optimizing for packaging decisions, for contracted lead times with vendors, those are all things today that are typically done statically and that take a tremendous amount of resources to analyze. We can help automate all of that.
Now, when you're working with a customer, they have a transportation management system, they have an ERP, how does your technology interface with that? And because you mentioned that this, we're talking about real time here, but I'm trying to understand, is this a separate platform or if it's integrated?
Yeah, and in some cases we can integrate directly to the platforms that they're using. And in some cases we do that. In other cases, we have an API. They can push all of that information to us, and that can be in our control tower. So it depends on how advanced and mature that particular customer's control tower is.
Yep. So you mentioned packaging. How can you help with the technology that to tell me my packaging is adequate or overkill or not adequate?
Yeah, so we have all of the rules, the product specifications that each product requires, right? So each product has very deliberate and specific temperature ranges that it can stay within and for how long. And these can become very complex. For example, there could be 10 different temperature ranges. In this range, that product can last 5 hours. In this range, it's 10 hours. And then there are specific rules such as, is this data cumulative? Is it continuous? So we have all that information. We have the information of understanding what packaging type is being used. Is it active refrigeration? Is it passive? What's the model? What's the brand of the package? What's the thermal life that's engineered on that package? And then we have other data, like the third-party data. What kind of temperature does it travel through? What's the historic temperature on a particular lane? How quickly does that temperature degrade over time? So we can very quickly see things like how many excursions with this particular package on this particular lane with this particular route at hand and these particular waypoints, how many excursions have happened? What is the root cause of those excursions? In some cases, it may be packaging. In other cases, it may be completely unrelated. So we can develop these indicators that tell companies that in some cases, like I said, packaging may be sub-optimized. You may be using too much phase change material where on average, when your shipment completes, you still have a full 24 hours on average that's remaining as a part of that package. And we can tell you that over the last year, you've had zero excursions, which is great, but you're overpacking by 24. You're over-engineering the solution that's needed by 24 hours. And the closest that maybe it's come to running out is 18 hours. You have to cut maybe 12 hours from that package. In other words, it's the exact opposite. We see there are different types of temperature breaches. There are spikes, which frequently happen when there's malfunctioning reefers. There are gradual increases that happen in the last mile, which are oftentimes correlated to temperature packaging issues, packaging bleed. They call it bleeding, right? So temperature bleeding within the package in the last mile. So we look at things like rate of change of the temperature, where it's happening in the network. Is it happening at a static waypoint? Is it happening during an in-transit leg? Who is the carrier?
So you're getting some of this data from devices like we mentioned, like the Tive sensor data. But when they don't have that, so for a last mile, how are you getting that information? Are you connecting to the last mile carrier too?
No, most of the supply chain legs that we cover do have IoT devices deployed. Our platform can expand the IoT intake and can take in data that may not necessarily come from an IoT device. There are different types of IoT data, right? There's ELD devices. There are devices that are embedded into the reefers or the containers. There's IoT sensors that are deployed at receiving docks or warehouses. And even though the crux of our solution today focuses on transportation, we can intake data from additional expanded IoT sources that may not necessarily be coming from that specific device that's attached to that specific pallet.
Yep. The way I'm thinking about this is you almost have to walk the entire process and see where there's possible risk. And any good ops guy is always first and foremost looking for risk reduction at the right price. But first and foremost, let's get rid of the risk. Then we'll worry about being cost effective later. And when you think of like food or pharma, if it's in a warehouse, there's a risk there, especially if you don't own that warehouse. But then when I move it from the warehouse to a truck, how long does it sit on the dock?
That's right.
And then I put it in the truck. Is the truck, the door was open for a while. Is it the right temperature? So we have all these handoffs that are all potentially a problem. And then again, when we're unloading it, same situation. And yeah, this is a complex problem. If I was working with you, would I be getting real-time updates on all of my shipping and where I was at risk today, but also recommendations on areas I can fix so I don't have problems?
So I would almost think about our platform as three different data types that you can operationalize. Number one is actually one that, are you familiar with the passive data loggers that don't have real-time cellular or IoT? So they're like the little temperature data loggers that you throw into a package, but they don't communicate via cellular.
Right.
They just temperature.
Yes. That's the old school.
That's the old school, but it still makes up a very large component of devices in the market. So from that standpoint, we can take in that data and essentially we've got a computer vision model that can take the extracts of the reports that are generated from that data, again, device agnostically, and we can mass upload those reports, and our computer vision model can convert that graph data into tabular data, and then that tabular data becomes fully reportable, and we can automate the accept, reject, quarantine decision process around the product and essentially tell you at scale across hundreds or thousands of lanes that are using these temperature data loggers, what those data loggers, how those lanes are performing, how the products on those lanes are performing. So that's passively, right? Those are temperature data logger devices. The second bucket, to your point, is using IoT data, but using it on a forward-looking basis. So we take historical shipments, we aggregate all that data, and we extract certain insights from it, and then we enable companies to take those summarized insights and basically make forward-looking network improvement decisions. And this is how we start cutting into that $440 billion number, right? By making the proper network changes today so that 2 weeks from now, 3 weeks from now, 4 weeks from now, my network is performing better than it is today based on the real-time continuous flow of information that I'm getting. And then the final bucket, to your point, is the real-time. So this is, what changes do I need to make now, today, right this minute, so that 4 hours from now or 8 hours from now, that product doesn't go bad. And that's based on a shipment basis. So that is on a real life, real time shipment basis. And that is what can help augment a lot of these IoT device companies. They have thousands of dots on the map. All of these control tower intervention teams are looking at these dots. And when a device alerts you with an issue, it's typically, number one, it's already too late. You're reacting. Number two, it takes a long time to investigate that alert and then trigger the proper intervention process that may ensue. So we can help be a little bit more preemptive, a little bit more predictive when problems arise. And we can help companies do that monitoring and intervention more efficiently and significantly cheaper than what it costs today.
What we need to buy ourselves is a little bit of time on this. So if I'm delivering, I'll just say produce, to a grocery store, and I know they have this much, this is what they have on hand, this is what is going to go bad, this is what we need to replenish, I need enough time to say, I'm going to divert this. I'm going to divert this to another store, or I'm going to sell it to another company. Finding out too late is the same as not finding out at all, right? Once it's at the store, I think the game's over, unless you shipping it to a food bank or whatever, maybe perhaps is not a bad thing, but you need to have the opportunity to make a decision. And I think the closer we get to the expiration date or the sell-by date or whatever you're using, the it's too late. I need it, that information a week, I don't know, I'm making this up, a week or 10 days ahead of time.
And that's exactly what we mean by autonomous decision support, right? So we continuously monitor all of this data on a real-time basis. We aggregate it after the fact. And we help you, we help the person that's in charge of making these decisions come to those decisions with as little effort and hopefully as little resources or spend as they have to, without the use of 20 or 25 consultants or having to pay the service provider a lot of money to generate custom reports so they can go analyze that information for themselves. And the part of the platform that we haven't really talked about yet as well is the recommendation engine. Right? The recommendation piece. So not only are we analyzing all of this information and basically helping you come to that decision, we're now able to generate recommendations and tell you proactively, here's what you should do. Here's the problem. Here's what you should do about it. And here's the supporting evidence using your own network's data.
I like it. I'm going to try and summarize all this. We've covered a lot of ground here, and I don't know, I'm not so sure I can understand all the nuances, but at a high level, you guys are helping people quantify that risk in advance. Next, you're helping them predict what is my OTIF going to look like? And then last but not least, you just mentioned it, you're helping them make those proactive decisions. You're diagnosing and making predictions and saying, here's my recommendations based on that. And I think you said it the other day, when we spoke, autonomous decision support. I need this. We need somebody to take all this data, simplify it, make it make sense for me. I don't think all what we talked about today can be very confusing, but at the end of the day, all I want is I want somebody to help me make better decisions. And we have to make these better decisions. By the way, whenever somebody says to me sustainability, my first thing back to them now, the last few months is, 30% of what we make, we never get it to an end consumer. I remember shipping a container loads of stuff, automotive parts, to China, and then them saying, hey, we're going to receive that in a week or whatever. And I said, yeah, I sent another container. That container is obsolete. They go, oh, can we rework? No, scrap. So imagine that entire supply chain that built those parts, that we load them onto a boat and ship them to the other side of the world. And a week or so out of port, I say, scrap. We do that, I'm going to say 30% of the time. So we can worry about, and I'm not against any of these things, we can worry about, oh, we got to reduce our carbon emissions. Yes, as time goes on, we will do that. But 30% of what we're making gets thrown out. We know that. So that for food, we already know that. Pharma, who knows what it is. But overall, our supply chains are creating stuff that never gets to an end consumer. That is the true waste in our world. And we got to do something. And by the way, it's also, coincidentally, hurts our bottom line pretty good too. So
That's very true. And I think there's also... So that's one thing that you just mentioned, the frequency with which this happens, which is absolutely valid. There's also, I think, a massive concentration right now on macro scale risk events. So these are like geopolitical strikes, disasters, geopolitical issues that happen, labor strikes, weather disasters, various external kind of environmental factors that can cause massive amounts of damage, but they happen pretty infrequently. So they happen maybe a few times a year, maybe when in some cases more often than not, and they can cause real disruption. But from a loss, from the amount of product loss standpoint, they're in the minority. Every single day, a pharma company will have temperature excursions along the way at some point in their network. And those everyday excursions, the losses on those, it's not just the product loss that's the loss to the company. It's the amount of time and effort downstream that they have to spend putting together these root cause analysis reports, these corrective action reports, figuring out, is this a one-off issue? Is this a systemic issue? Was this a packaging root cause, or was this a reefer malfunction, or did the truck driver open the door? What controls do I put into place to make sure this doesn't happen in the future? That's where a lot of the loss and the inefficiency is. We're basically marrying up that macro scale risk that comes from this big one-time infrequent disasters with the stuff that's going on every single day on your shipment. And we're combining it and packaging it together and helping companies make intelligent decisions around that.
Yeah, when you look at, again, $440 billion in waste in just the pharma and food space, it could be a half a billion. So when somebody calls you and says, hey, I got a problem, that problem is worth millions and millions of dollars. And you only want about, what, two-thirds, half that? And you only want about two-thirds or half that money. Your solution is a small investment next to these numbers. So anyway, Ilya, put a big old bow on this one. I'm not even going to try and summarize. You summarize it and give me final thoughts on the topic.
Yeah, I think it's very simple. Our vision is to become the most accurate arbiter of quantifying, predicting, and underwriting supply chain risk. We've had that be, I think, in our vision statement since probably 2020. So it was there from the very beginning. We've, I believe, over the last 2 years, have really shown evidence as we've continued to grow and scale with more and more customers that we're able to deliver on that vision. We are seeing that we're able to quantify risk, predict adverse OTIF events before they occur, and now just recently start with the recommendation of the, so what do we need to do about this? How do we operationalize all this information, this data proactively? And that's everything that we're building, I think, fluctuates around that vision. And we're very excited for it. We think there's a need in the market for it.
So again, who's the sweet spot for PackSafe?
From a customer standpoint, it's if you're a pharmaceutical company that manufactures medicines and drugs and vaccines, if you're a food and beverage manufacturer, or if you're a service provider that sells in to one of those two customer profiles. So if you're a 3PL, if you're an IoT device company, if you're a cold chain packaging company, you are a target partner for us.
Very nice. Very nice. So Ilya, what conferences will we see you guys at?
Yeah. So I think on the books right now, we only have the large Logipharma conferences. We're going to be in France, in Lyon in next month in April, mid-April. And then we will be in back in Boston, I think around October for the Logipharma conference. We are actively looking for additional conferences to take on, both on the life science and the food and beverage side. So I suspect you may see us in a few others somewhere in between and probably mostly stateside, but we're excited for it. We've only historically done the Logipharma conferences, and now we're starting to really venture out and look at additional conferences to take on.
I love what you guys are doing. Congrats. It's a much needed solution. It's not an easy solution, but it's one we need. And again, it's going after a humongous problem. So good
That's
luck
right.
to you.
Well, Ian, I really enjoyed it.
Yep. And thank all of you for listening to my podcast. Your support's very much appreciated. I know I say it all the time, but your support is very much appreciated. Until next time, onward and upward.
You have been listening to the Logistics of Logistics podcast, where we engage with leaders in the logistics and supply chain community. If you like what you hear, please subscribe, hit the like button, and leave us a nice review on Apple or Spotify or wherever else you listen. Also, please check out our videos on YouTube and connect with us on LinkedIn. We're very big on LinkedIn. And you can also reach us on the logisticsoflogistics.com, our website.